Under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend J. Michael Byron from St. Pascal Baylen Catholic Church in St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pray. Holy God, help us to remember who we are. Not all powerful, but gifted with resources to shape our community. Not all knowing, but possessed of the intelligence to make wise choices. Not the source of our own destiny, but invited to cooperate with you in preparing for our future. Not without sin or failure, but able to be reconciled and restored after mistakes. Not without personal initiative and industry, but needing a healthy community in order to be happy. Not content when only one person has been successful or a few, but when all Minnesota is made better by our efforts. Not forgetful of the sacrifices made by those who have preceded us, but grateful to be the inheritors of an honorable legacy. Not content merely to be convicted, but desirous of pursuing what is truly just and good. Not concerned only for the like-minded or the reliable ally, but also for those who do not appreciate us. Not persuaded by the loudest noise, but by the deepest integrity. And not ever, ever left to fend for ourselves, but always accompanied by your benevolent presence and guidance. Holy God, help us to remember who we are and to do our work accordingly. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for having me.
Bye. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reiner, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file. Senate file number 997, a bill for an act relating to insurance, long-term care, reducing the minimum permitted inflation protection for a long-term care insurance partnership policy. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Shoemaker, Hoppe, and Atkins. Senate file number 997 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file. Senate file number 1265, a bill for an act relating to insurance, permitting individuals to contract with an insurance producer to advocate on the individual's behalf. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House, Davids, Hoppe, and Rosenthal. Senate file number 1265 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. We have one more message. All right. Back on messages from the House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 307. House File Number 307, a bill for an act relating to transportation, commerce, providing for proof of insurance in electronic format. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Fabian, Zerwas, and Hillstrom have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 307 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ekin.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 307 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Another message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 1725. House File Number 1725, a bill for an act relating to state government, permitting electronic filing for hearings in contested cases at the Office of Administrative Hearings. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Christensen, Kresha, and Poppy have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 1725 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 1725 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with the alike conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
And Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 1554 and 2193. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The House bill printed on the agenda will be given its first reading and referred as indicated. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction, first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. This is an author's motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate resolution number 152 through 159 will be referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. Members, the list is on your desk.
The first bill on special orders is number 26 on general orders, House File 1427, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 1427 deals with the District 1 hospital located in Rice County. Previously, we had changed the laws that apply to this and allowed them to be sold to a private company. When that happened and has been moving forward, they realized when the board met that the language still included the requirement for the board to meet every month. Now that that sale has completed, they have requested that we look at that language and change that so that they can meet twice a year rather than the 12-month requirement that is currently in legislation, and I hope for your support on this bill.
Are there any comments or questions on the bill? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 1427, a bill for an act relating to local government, changing the meeting requirements for the District 1 Hospital Board.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll.
So, Kevin,
all senators voting who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders is Senate Bill number 82 on general orders, House File number 1036, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. President. House File 1036 is a housekeeping bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Academy of Physicians Assistants. I want to thank the bipartisan co-authors that joined me introducing this bill, Senators Claussen, Lori, Hoffman, and Nino. I want members to know that this bill makes no changes to their scope of practice for a physician's assistant. And I don't believe there's any controversy with this bill. I've not heard any concerns from either organizations or individuals. It's been reviewed by the Board of Medical Practice, which licenses and regulates PAs. The bill makes several changes to existing statutes. Section 1, 3, and 6 eliminate an outdated provision that requires practicing PAs to have not only a supervising physician, but also an alternate supervising physician. PAs do not have independent practice authority. They must have a written agreement with a supervising physician that outlines their scope of practice. This bill does not change that. However, current law requires the PA to also have an alternative supervising physician agreement with a second physician. Today, much of the outpatient care is delivered in large multi-specialty clinics that may have dozens or even hundreds of physicians. Similarly, PAs practicing in hospital ERs or surgical suites may work with a dozen or more different physicians in the course of their shift. They're taking orders from multiple physicians instead of just one alternative supervising physician. The bill eliminates the requirement to have this. And eliminating the alternative supervising physician requirement will maintain the existing supervision and requirements. Section 2 of the bill eliminates another outdated supervision requirement. Currently, there's an artificial cap on the number of PAs a physician can supervise. That number is 5, and there is no documentation of why that number is 5. So given how healthcare is changing, particularly in rural settings, arbitrary caps don't make sense. Eliminating the cap on how many PAs a physician may supervise is supported by the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American College of Surgeons, and the Federation of State Medical Boards. There's a growing shortage of physicians in rural Minnesota, and if we want rural residents to get care when they need it, we need to facilitate health care providers being able to practice. Lifting the current arbitrary cap is one thing we can do to help. Again, this provision has been reviewed by the Board of Medical Practice, and let's see, Section 4, the bill modifies a reporting requirement. Currently, a PA cannot begin to practice after they're licensed and have been hired by a hospital or clinic until they notify the Board of Medical Practice where they will be practicing in the name of their supervising physician. This information is used by the Board of Medical Practice to track prescribers. The Board maintains a database for the prescription monitoring program of prescribers to track certain prescribers over-prescribing narcotics or other medications. This provision keeps the requirement that a PA must notify the Board of Medical Practice where they are working and their supervisory physician, but grants them 30 days to get this information to the Board. Section 5 of the bill directs the reviser of statutes to fix a typo in how physician assistants are referred throughout the state statute and rules. A typo was made many years ago on a PA bill, and it's been there for decades. So Section 5 eliminates that. Well, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions or comments? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton will yield. Senator Senjum.
Senator Eaton, I just need a little bit of comfort on this one. From the standpoint of certainly rural Minnesota and practicing physician assistants, I think it works perfectly. But my question relates to medical organizations that may have within the structure of that organization a hierarchy, if you will, of patient provider. And as a matter of organizational policy, adhere to the fact that in most cases, I think in every case, the physician is the lead medical advisor on any given patient. Would your bill fall in the face of internal policies that reflect the fact that the chief, if you will, physician, primary physician for any given patient is the person that really leads the medical consult on that patient?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Senjum. Yes, it would follow that. This would not change the scope of practice of physician's assistants.
Senator Senjum, are there any amendments or questions on the bill? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A50 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend House File Number 1036 as follows, page 3. This is the A50 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members. This amendment assures that the Advisory Council on Licensed Traditional Midwives of the Board of Medical Practice includes a practicing physician who has collaborated with licensed midwives in the course of his or her medical practice and is familiar with the limits and scopes of their practice. Physicians who collaborate with licensed midwives on a frequent or regular basis are best qualified to review licensing issues and make recommendations to the full board, and thus avoid both wasting state resources on frivolous complaints or overlooking serious issues. The amendment also allows for the administration by licensed midwives of ROGAM, a one-time preventative application for babies whose mothers are Rh negative according to the screening required statute. This is within the scope of practice of the accredited national certification required for licensed midwives. The amendment has been reviewed by the president of the Board of Medical Practice, and they have no objection. I appreciate your support.
On the Pappas Amendment, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I rise in support of this amendment. These are very reasonable approach amendments that will strengthen both midwifery and also encourage collaboration between physicians and for the midwives. So I encourage support of this amendment. Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do support this amendment and consider it a friendly amendment to my bill.
Any further comments on the Pappas Amendment? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Pappas take a question?
Senator Pappas will yield. Senator Hall.
Senator Pappas and Mr. Chair, on line 2.26, you talk about a licensed traditional midwife. Can you tell me what the traditional and is there a non-traditional midwife or what that means? Any thought on that?
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Hall. It's a term of art for midwives who attend to the birth in people's homes and sometimes in birth centers.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Pappas. Well, I thought any licensed midwife, or is that just traditional, is that always put in there? I just thought a licensed midwife would be the right name to call it, but that's why I wondered what traditional was. Any thought? I don't mean to put you on the spot with that either. In my family, we've done home births with midwives. We've done them in the hospital with midwives, and I just never heard that term.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. President and Senator Hall, there are traditional midwives who are not licensed, so we want to make the distinction that traditional midwives do attend home births and have for decades, and they do still exist in smaller and smaller numbers as more of the traditional midwives have gone through the licensing process.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Pappas please yield?
Senator Pappas will yield. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pappas, I was wondering if you could give us the direction that this bill has taken, if we've seen it in both the policy and if there is any finance. I know we're all struggling on Health and Human Services that carry bills dealing with HHS to find appropriate bills. I just questioning just a little bit of the germaneness. I'm probably a co-author on this bill, but I would just like to know if this is the bill that you have brought forward to the committees, if there's any changes, and if you can justify the germaneness to Senator Eaton's bill.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Rosen, we found out during the process of several hearings that to transfer the advisory board and the licensing provisions, the oversight for traditional midwives to the Department of Health, which was their desire, would be too expensive for a variety of technical reasons. So when it came down to it, they really just had a concern about, their main concern was about the advisory committee. The Board of Medical Practice had appointed physicians that didn't have any familiarity with midwifery, and certainly not with traditional midwifery, and they had never worked in collaboration with a traditional midwife. So by making sure that the physician who is appointed it has a relationship with midwives and knows their scope of practice and provides backup for them, that will provide for a better relationship on the Board of Medical Practice. So we hope to stay there and continue there.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Pappas please yield?
Senator Pappas will yield. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pappas, but did this bill receive a hearing? Did we discuss this in HHS Senator Sharon's committee at all? I just would like to know the tract of this bill.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, let me be clear. Yes, we did. We did discuss this issue in both Senator Sharon's committee and in Senator Lori's committee. And it was sent back and forth between committees a couple times because of the financial implications. And finally, Senator Lori said that we couldn't have any policy in his bill. So then we kind of had an orphan bill, and we're trying to figure out what to do with it when we just slimmed it down to this very minor change in the advisory committee.
Any further discussion on the Pappas Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on House File 1036? Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'd like to offer the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the Sharon amendment.
Senator Sharon moves to amend House File Number 1036 as follows, page 3, and this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Members, this amendment is actually also a bill, Senate File 1521, which is on this floor. It did go through the committee process, was heard, and moved forward without reservation. The reason that I'm presenting it to you as an amendment to the bill here has to do with our ability to make certain that it is connected to a vehicle that is aligned to activity in the House. And so I want to assure you that the contents of the amendment have been heard in the various committees. What this bill does as a matter of description is to make revisions that relate to health licensing. It modifies language relating to the temporary suspension of a license so that it aligns the board's processes as it relates to temporary licenses to the contested case hearing processes. To give context to you, we did pass in 2014 legislation that authorized all health licensing boards to temporarily suspend the licenses of health professionals whose continued practice presented imminent risk of harm to the patients that they were serving. The statute changes that we made required that a board schedule that hearing process pursuant to administrative procedures and that it begin no later than 30 days after the issuance of the temporary suspension. This had to do with our concerns about the provider having a license that was temporarily suspended and not able to go ahead with their professional practice. So that's that 30-day issue is what really has created a bit of a difficulty in its application, because after the 30 days, it could be lifted if the board had not completed its investigation and issued its final orders. So the reasoning for this proposed revision that was in this bill, now an amendment, is that that while the health licensing boards may conduct an investigation and initiate that hearing within 30 days, the board does not control the scheduling or oversight of a contested case hearing conducted pursuant to the Administrative Procedure Act. So because a temporary suspension, investigation, contested case hearing, and final order, the final order on that are a sequential process, it's not reasonable for us to require that that be completed within 30 days after a temporary suspension. So the proposed revisions in this bill are designed to continue to protect the public, be able to use a temporary suspension process when there is evidence of imminent risk, while assuring the licensee's right to an expedited process following that temporary suspension. And the proposed revisions align board and administrative hearing processes. In addition, in this bill, there is a section, or excuse me, in this amendment, is a section that relates to the licensing of professional nurses, allows nurses who are not licensed in Minnesota, who have the appropriate credentials, can come to the state when their role or their execution of their role relates to such things as continuing education or consultation with professionals and is not related to direct service care. So that's in essence what's in the amendment. It is what was in the bill. It moves through the committee process, and I'm hoping to gain your support.
Is there any discussion on the A51 amendments? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just rise to support this amendment. I think it's a pretty simple amendment, and it corrects an error that we made by mistake, and I urge your support.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion on the A51 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Clausen moves to amend House File Number 1036 as follows, page 3, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment addresses the severe statewide shortage of psychiatrists by allowing physician assistants to provide medication management services to patients on medical assistance. Following 2,000 hours of clinical experience and the evaluation and treatment of mental health patients, currently in Minnesota, there are 25 physician assistants that meet these qualifications. During the past interim, I had the privilege of co-chairing the Healthcare Workforce Commission and also worked on the mental health study authorized by the 2013 legislature. Both of these groups identified the shortage of psychiatric care as a major issue facing our state. In 2013, Minnesota Department of Human Services report to the legislature on the role of physician assistants in outpatient mental health care also recommended establishing a certified psychiatric physician assistant as the minimum provider eligibility required for medical assistant payment. Minnesota currently ranks near the bottom of the 50 states in the number of psychiatrists per 10,000 residents. And if you need to see a psychiatrist, it is difficult. And if you have medical assistance, scheduling an appointment can take several weeks. And I'd like to turn your attention to a map that has been handed out. The title is Loan Forgiveness for Mental Health, but I'm using that map to illustrate of the various zones in the state of Minnesota, there are only two that have been not designated as shortages in the area of mental health. And those are in the metro area in southeast Minnesota. All the other areas are underserved or are not being served currently with mental health psychiatric care. Physician assistants currently provide medication management services to patients with commercial insurance and those that are self-insured. They also serve patients with coverage from Medicare or workers' compensation, and in hospitals, they serve patients who are enrolled in medical assistance. However, physician assistants are not authorized under current law to bill medical assistance for medication management services they provide to medical assistant patients in outpatient settings. Medical assistant patients discharged from a hospital setting typically have a 30-day supply of medication, but frequently must wait 60 or more days to see a psychiatrist for a medication management evaluation review. Unfortunately, a medical assistant patient can relapse while waiting for an appointment and often are readmitted to a hospital, which is an additional cost to the state, not to mention the personal setback in treatment for the patient. A second consequence that happens frequently when a medical assistant patient cannot get medications monitored is they end up incarcerated. Multiple committees this session have heard testimony from law enforcement personnel that they are overwhelmed with mentally ill patients being housed in jails when they should be in a hospital setting. This amendment helps address these problems. It authorized physician assistants to bill medical assistance for medication management, evaluation, and management services provided to medical assistant patients in outpatient settings. This will help address the shortage of psychiatrists, will help keep medical assistant enrollees out of our hospitals and jails, and will address the shortage of hospital psychiatric beds. As identified on the handout that has been distributed, this legislation is supported by the Minnesota Psychiatric Society, the Minnesota Medical Association, the Minnesota Hospital Association, and several hospital systems in Minnesota that treat mental health patients. I also want to highlight that this amendment is also supported by the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. The State Ombudsman for Mental Health is the state leading advocate for mental health patients and agrees that patients will be better served if they can receive timely care from a physician assistant. This legislation was approved unanimously in the House HHS Reform Committee, was added by unanimous vote to the House HHS Finance Bill, and is included in the House Omnibus HHS Finance Bill. And Minnesota is the only state that bars physician assistance payment for providing mental health medication management and evaluation services to outpatient medical assistance patients. A fiscal note on the bill was received from the Department of Human Services, and you have a copy of that on your desk. The department fiscal note stated the bill will increase costs by increasing access to services, but the lower service costs of a physician assistant resulted in neutralizing the overall expenditure of adding this access. There are additional savings in hospital emergency room costs, hospital psychiatric units, and costs incurred by the criminal justice system. More importantly are the human costs to those dealing with mental health issues that go untreated. And I would appreciate your support for this amendment, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I stand in support of the Klassen Amendment. Physicians' assistants have been trying to do this for years, and there's been one certain organization blocking them. This is really important because, as you said, we're dead last in psychologists, psychiatrists, and so forth, or very close to dead last. We're very much dead last in treatment and crisis beds. And the physician's assistants should certainly be able to pass medication because check medication because social workers are doing it now, and they don't have the kind of training that physician's assistants have. So this is long overdue, and I heavily support it, and I hope everybody will agree to this. Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also rise in support of this amendment. As a member of the Healthcare Workforce Commission, we heard a lot of testimony on this issue. And what's most sad is the money that it costs the state when patients on medical assistance don't get timely management of their medications. This is one of the biggest issues. It leads to other criminal activity. It leads to other serious harm for these patients. It leads to unnecessary costs and expense and use of an emergency room, and these are well-qualified. Physician assistant is well-qualified. They do this kind of management already just outside the medical assistance system, and so giving them this authority within is, again, a long time due, and I think that it will serve our healthcare system well to have this language change. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to also say that I support this bill. The PAs are doing this already inpatient. All we're doing is extending this ability to complete medication management and evaluation outside of in outpatient settings.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I do want to thank Senator Eaton for accepting this amendment and Senator Claussen for your work on that, on this issue, and on to the others that have worked on this issue in this chamber. Mental health is one of the topics and areas that we are working very diligently on in HHS, and there's been some great focus on mental health issues. This is another tool in the toolbox that I think is going to be very appropriate, and I just want to point out again that Senator Claussen's map says over 90% of psychiatrists and psychologists and over 80% of social workers practice exclusively in the metro areas. This is a huge issue for greater Minnesota to help the folks that need it most. So please support this amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the Claussen A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on House File 1036? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give House File 1036 its third reading.
House File Number 1036, a bill for an act relating to health care, modifying provisions related to physician assistance.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 113 on general orders, House File 1030, oops, House File 177, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the amendment made to House File 177 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted on May 11, 2015, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
And Senator Jensen, can you please explain your motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. After the Senate file passed through the Commerce Committee, there were some concerns, and we wanted to address those concerns and continued to meet with the Department of Commerce, with legal aid, and with insurance federation to make sure that those consumer protections were met. They did add those amendments into the House, and I would like to adopt that language at this time.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. The motion is adopted. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill establishes a mechanism for self-storage facilities to offer and for consumers to obtain a limited insurance coverage for the loss and damage of personal property that they have in a self-storage unit. The limited self-storage insurance is designed to fill a gap that currently exists for consumers who very often cannot access similar coverage elsewhere. They're in transition and do not carry homeowners or renters policies. Currently in Minnesota, for those that whose homeowners or renters policy provide the coverage for possessions and storage, however, for the estimated 50 to 60% of self-storage tenants who are in that transition, often between homes or residing in apartments without current renters policies, it presents a problem for them. They do not have a choice but to leave their property in that facility without coverage. Currently, 20 states administer some type of limited self-storage insurance program, providing the option for 65% of the facilities nationwide. The approach for this, for the administration and oversight, as well as training and requirements for employees, are in this bill. It's similar to what is already utilized in other industries, including electronics, car rental, travel insurance. It explicitly requires disclosure to prospective customers that their existing homeowners, renters, or property insurance coverage may already cover the contents. This is meant to meet an unmet need currently. It's not intended to create duplicate consumer coverages. Very simply, this bill will provide access to very limited insurance option for significant number of tenants that do not currently have homeowners or renters policies, and I ask for your support.
Is there any discussion on House File 177? Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, I have a question of parliamentary procedure. I'm just wondering if you could advise, under Rule 49, what portions of today's proceedings will be recorded in the House Journal and Index? 49.3 in particular, if you could advise, Mr. President.
No, I can't. Okay.
No, I can't.
Is there any discussion on House... Is there any discussion on House File 177? I said, no, I can't. Seeing no further discussion on House File 177, the Secretary will give House File 177 its third reading.
House File Number 177, a bill for an act relating to insurance, regulating the sale of self-service storage insurance.
Does anybody else want to ask a foolish question? The Secretary will take the roll. Yes.
I bet he would have done something like that.
Are you having fun or are you really voting?
Senator Sharon, do you want to vote? All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 78 on the general orders calendar, Senate file 1603, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is on the crime of automated sales suppression devices, or zappers, use. Some businesses are using these automatic sales suppression devices to make it appear as if they did not collect as much sales tax as they actually did. As a result, these businesses remit to the state a smaller amount of sales tax than they receive from their customers. Zappers are a software program that makes siphoning cash from cash registers and evading tax officials easy for restaurants and retail store owners. The National Restaurant Association estimated in 2011 that Zappers cost Minnesota approximately $41.2 million in lost tax revenue from the 9,767 restaurants in the state, with an additional $17.8 million lost from the convenience stores. In short, Zappers are a new twist on the old practice of maintaining two sets of books. Zappers alter the electronic sales record in a cash register by accessing the machine's memory and changing the record with no physical paper trail, and businesses like restaurants, hair salons, and grocery stores that commonly deal in untraceable cash simply having a computer program alter the records in the computer's memory and suggests how much cash to take makes tax fraud very easy. Currently, Minnesota does not impose penalties for sale or possession of sales suppression or zapper software. This limitation makes it difficult for the Minnesota Department of Revenue to pursue businesses and individuals that do not transmit to the state all the sales tax they've collected. This legislative proposal makes it unlawful for persons to sell, purchase, install, transfer, possess, access, or use tax evasion software designed to falsify sales records to avoid remitting of collected sales tax. This tax evasion software is sold factory installed on point of sale machines or cash registers, or sold separately and is even offered as a cloud-based service. It creates a statute to make it unlawful for a person to, this is a good bill. It could save our state a lot of money and make it possible for the state of Minnesota to collect millions of dollars worth of sales tax.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1603? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 1603 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1603, a bill for an act relating to taxation, sales, and use, providing criminal and civil penalties for use of automated sales suppression devices.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll.
Does Kevin stand over here? This is also current credit. That's the symbol. That's equality.
All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 98 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 706, Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 706, House File 908, deals with issues that, 245D, which deals with the disability community. In 2012, Minnesota adopted a single set of standards for all disability services, and that had created Minnesota Statutes 245D. It's a good thing for the disability community and their services providers, as it focuses on regulations on individualized person-centered principles. These changes, along with reforming our rate-setting system, which is 256B, are transformational and complicated, and it's been agreed upon this year by all the stakeholders on these issues that need more clarity to 245D and correcting some of the issues that were inadvertently left out and or written incorrectly in the original 245D. So as I said, this has been agreed upon by the advocates, but some of the revisions that are in 245A that have been revised is it matches the language of 245D regarding training on medical equipment to sustain life or monitor a medical condition that could harm life-threatening, and also allows a license holder's governing body to designate a representative to review program abuse prevention plans. The revisions in 245D provides a definition of a working day, clarifies language regarding written authorization to administer medication, adds serious injury, the term serious injury, to things that need to be reported to DHS licensing and Ombudsman for mental health and developmental disabilities. Also removes the requirement for CPR instructions to be done in person, allows someone to be restrained if necessary to provide medical treatment ordered by a medical professional for both short-term and long-term condition, clarifies timelines by adding calendar to days when not otherwise defined, also allows a team to determine whether they want a report prior to a meeting, addresses the issue of approval of changes made at planning meetings, and allows for someone other than the trainer or instructor to do observed skill assessment. Also clarifies that someone has a current first aid certification that are not required to have annual training in first aid, and also clarifies staffing ratios in day services. The revisions in 256B removes the language on technology monitoring review panel, which DHS practice does not meet statute, and they are in agreement that this is not needed. So with that, Mr. President and members, it's a very technical bill. Like I said, it just clarifies some of the issues that were brought up. It is agreed upon by all the advocates, the providers, and the department. With that, I ask for your support and questions.
Is there any further discussion on Senate File 706? Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment for this bill, the A3 amendment.
The secretary will report the A3 amendment.
Senator Franzen moves to amend Senate File number 706 as follows, page 1, and this is the A3 amendment.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment, I've spoken to the author about it. It incorporates a bill that went through the committee process, and it's an additional policy that's related to Section 245D. And in essence, it has two components. One of them, it clarifies that providers who have more than one service site when they're under a licensing action process, that site will be the only site that would be under scrutiny. This is when providers have more than one site in their network. We want to make sure that the licensing action or sanctions are being evaluated for that particular site, and we want to clarify that process. So the other piece, it also establishes an opportunity for settlement meetings as part of the process when dealing with adverse licensing issues. And this has been vetted through DHS and the Office of Inspector General. The DHS and the stakeholders, ARM in particular, have been working on this language, and we want to make sure that moves forward when related to Senator Rosen's bill. And I stand for questions.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Franzen, for bringing this forward. I stand in strong support of the A3 amendment. This is very important to groups that serve our disabled community, and I think this is a necessary adjustment. It has strong support in the House also.
Is there any further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 706? Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A2 amendment.
Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Hayden moves to amend Senate File number 706 as follows, page 13, and this is the A2 amendment.
Senator Hayden, on the A2 amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. President and members. I have the A2 amendment, which is Senate File 706. Senate File 706 legislation would allow North Memorial Hospital to continue to expand the work they've been doing in the last few years around the ACO modeling in the Medicaid and Medicare world. This legislation would allow North Memorial to partner with a third-party administrator, if they wish, to bid in any future Medicaid procurement process. North Memorial began this journey of successfully managing and contracting risk and care coordination with Medicaid populations when the legislature turned to North Memorial to participate in their CCDS, or Coordinated Care Delivery Model. This legislation passed all the House and Senate Finance and Policies Committees and was included in the HHS Omnibus Bill. There was no opposition to this language.
Senator Rosen, on the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I, too, stand in support of the A2 amendment. And there was some question whether it was going to be germane to this bill. And I find it germane, and I hope you members will find it, too. It revises a 256B statute, which this bill clearly adjusts also as the 256B. And I stand in strong support of Senator Hayden's bill.
Any further discussion or comments on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 706? Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now have the A5 amendment.
Secretary will report the A5 amendment.
Senator Hayden moves to amend Senate File number 706 as follows, page 15, and this is the A5 amendment.
Senator Hayden, on the A5 amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Senate File 1012. Mr. Chair and members, this bill is sitting on general orders, but we wanted to align this with a bill that is moving in the House. This amendment speaks to which housing choices are available with people who receive waivers and other home community services. It specifically deals with the cap that no more than 25% of the tenants in a setting be able to receive services. This is an issue that's received a lot of work over the past few years, and it has bipartisan support. We've heard about the ways the cap is written in the current statute is having several unintended consequences or impacts, being possibly not as enforceable in some situations, conflicting with the new CMS policy that prohibits grandfathering and exceptions in this area policy, and creating a patchwork of carve-outs. What we learned last year is that most stakeholders agree that what is currently in statute could be improved. We are now a full year into some new federal rules that have pointed us towards a path forward. My amendment reflects input from DHS and puts the settings on a pace to comply with the new CMS rules. Specifically, it moves the 25% measure from statute into policy. The policy vehicles are statewide transition plan and waiver plans, expires exceptions currently in statute, except for the HOPWA exceptions that since HOPWA exceptions since that has been federal HUD interactions. That is the housing opportunities with persons with AIDS. It makes effective date for all changes July 2016. The timing of these changes are intentional since we have just a short window to move all the settings into compliance with federal rules. This amendment does not have a fiscal note, and the language is contained in the House Omnibus Finance Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or Mr. President.
Any discussion on the Hayden A5 amendment? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Hayden please yield?
Senator Hayden will yield. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Hayden, if you could again refresh my memory, this was just brought to me, that you brought actually this to me this morning. I need to have my memory refreshed on the 1.14, the settings required by the Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS program. Did we hear this in the Senator Sharon's committee?
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. President and Senator Rosen. We did hear this bill in Senator Sharon's committee. And it was referred to general orders, and we're just kind of lining this up. We heard it without opposition.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Hayden. And, of course, we're doing the dance because there is no policy allowed in the HHS conference committee bill that we are hearing right now. So I have agreed to allow this onto this bill. It is affecting the 256B, again, statutes, which is germane. Members, I support this bill, but you, I don't strongly support this bill, but I do support the bill.
You support this amendment, you mean? Is there any further discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on Senate File 706? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 706 its third reading.
Senate File Number 706, a bill for an act relating to human services, modifying licensing requirements for foster care providers.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Sharon yield for a question?
Senator Sharon will yield for a question. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sharon, it appears as though your committee, your authorship of a policy bill is not going to happen. Is that your intention, to not have an omnibus policy bill for health and human services?
Senator Kiffmeyer, it's not on the bill, but I'll allow the question. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Yes, I'll try to explain that there is a Department of Human Services policy bill. It has to do with changes and reforms that the department requests based on application of law, things that needed to be corrected, or things that need to be aligned with federal law. That there is that policy bill. It's going to be coming over from the House tomorrow. But all bills that are generated in Health and Human Services that were policy-related but did not have finance implications will all move forward on their own to the floor.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. President.
Kiffmeyer. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Sharon please yield?
Is it on the bill?
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator
Sharon, does that mean
Senator,
there will
Senator
be
Rosen,
no...
Senator Rosen, is it on your bill?
Excuse me?
Is this about your bill? And we're trying to pass your bill, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She started it, yeah.
Senator Sharon, do you yield? Okay, Senator Sharon will yield.
It's a, thank you, Mr. President. It's about the question Senator Kiffmeyer had about the DHS policy bill and if it would be amendable to other policy bills that need to be brought up this week.
Senator Sharon, to that point, this bill is on third reading, so it's not no further amendments can be put on this bill. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Bill that is coming over from the House, is my goal is to have the bill be heard without additional amendments to that bill. I've been clear throughout the entire session that all bills coming through the Senate from Health and Human Services policy that have no finance implications are going directly to the floor. The bill that has been introduced there by Representative Mack passed unanimously. It's coming here. We will pick up the House file
and passing it as accepted from the House. I can't stop people, of course, from offering amendments, but I have established an agreement and hope that we're able to move that through without additional amendments.
Is there any further discussion on any other bill that anybody would like to talk about? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 706. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on under consideration is number 38 on the general orders calendar, House File 1193, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move that the amendment made to House File number 1193 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted May 7th, 2015, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
And Senator Wicklund, would you like to explain why you're moving Rule 45?
Yes, Mr. President. I am moving to accept the House language because the only difference occurred after this bill was heard in the Senate. It was discovered that one of the nonprofit organizations that is going to be included in this exemption does not meet the language that says must be operated by a nonprofit incorporated in Minnesota. The Salvation Army is incorporated in Illinois, and so the three words were added, or another state, to include that organization. And that's the only difference between the Senate file, and so that's why I would like to accept the House language.
Any discussion on the Wicklund motion to strike Rule 45? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Mr. President. House File 1193 has to do with school-age student programs for school-age children, and it will exempt an after-school program for school-age child care from school-age child care licensing, provided that they meet certain conditions. And it also removes or repeals a moratorium that was put in place in 2012 on school-age child care licensing that expires in July. This was work that was done jointly between DHS and representatives of Ignite After School, which is the organization that represents a network of after-school programs. It's supported by the Minnesota School-Age Child Care Association, United Way, the Salvation Army, and many other organizations that serve young people. Currently, there are 26 exemptions from school-age child care licensing. However, many after-school programs do not neatly fit any of the existing exemptions, nor do they fit the current child care licensing regulations well. There was a moratorium passed in 2012 because DHS and the after-school program providers needed time to work on acceptable language that would cover an exemption for after-school programs. And this bill is a result. What the bill would require for an organization to meet the exemption, it must be operated by a nonprofit organization that serves youth in kindergarten through grade 12. It must provide structured youth development activities that take place when school is not in session. It must have a director or supervisor on site who is responsible for ensuring the health and safety of program participants and supervising staff and volunteers. They must obtain written consent from parents or guardians of each youth participant and provide notice to parents that parents or guardians that the program is not licensed or supervised by the state of Minnesota. And it's also not eligible to receive child care assistance payments. There are some hurdles in the child care licensing requirements that these programs would have great difficulty in meeting. And one example would be that child care facilities, licensed facilities, are required to have dedicated space. While these programs, such as the Salvation Army's programs, provides after-school activities and programs for children, but they do it in their space that's not dedicated to child activities. It's just a part of their facility. Without this bill, many youth across the state will lose the opportunity to participate in these programs that have demonstrated themselves to be valuable resources for children in our communities. We have letters of support from the Ignite After School Network, the United Way, and Salvation Army that you have on your desk. And there are other organizations in Minneapolis, Banyan Community in Minneapolis, and then there's an organization in Rochester that falls into this category as well. So I would request your support for this bill and stand for questions.
Any further discussion on House File 1193? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 1193 its third reading.
House File number 1193, a bill for an act relating to human services, excluding certain school-age child care programs from human services licensure.
Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 111 on general orders calendar, Senate File 383, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 383 is a modernization of our optometry statutes. It's gone through several committees. We've heard it twice now. Last year we went through the same process. It wasn't able to be passed into law, but we went through health, human services, housing, judiciary, state and local government. There were some things in the statute that referred to a five-year program rollout that no longer applied, so those sections were removed. And then the biggest thing is that this is the changes that they made were mirrored after the Medical Practice Act, and that was at the suggestion of the Attorney General. So this has been looked at very closely. It modernizes, and it It reflects the current practice that is currently taking place and makes clear that the expectations of optometrists and safeguards are provided to their patients. I'm looking for your support on this bill.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 383? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 383 its third reading.
Senate File Number 383, a bill for an act relating to health occupations, changing provisions for licensing of optometrists.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 383. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 103 on general orders calendar, House File 916, Senator Rood.
Mr. President and members, House File 916 is a bill that authorized the Crow Wing County Board to make the offices of County Auditor, Treasurer, and Recorder appointed rather than elective. I'm sure you've seen similar versions of this bill before. Currently, 75% of the state's population already lives in a county that has received and exercised this authority. 5 counties were given this authority last year. 70 of Minnesota's 87 counties already have implemented one or more of these changes in their county offices. This bill had quite a journey because, as you know, Senator Pappas had a bill that would be a global solution to this because our counties have to come before this body year after year to do this. Over 30 of them have done this. And it's time we make that change. But in the fact that we did not, this bill has gone through state and local committee. It went through the Subcommittee on Elections. It also went through the Rules Committee. So it has seen its due diligence in the committees. And I ask you for your support in this bill to allow Crow Wing County to serve its citizens. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on House File 916? Senator Westrum.
Mr. President, members, Senator Rood, as I've discussed with you, members, I would urge us to say no to this trend that continues to erode local elected positions and turn them into appointments. For years, I've stood up and raised this issue. My local treasurer and auditor and others have communicated to me their interest in keeping these appointed or elected. But members, more so what we are doing here is bypassing the voters in counties when we continue to do this. Senator Rood is right. Several counties have done this now. A few of them have done it the right way, which is go to the voters and ask them if they can want to change from an election locally to an appointment. But historically, most of those referendums fail because the voters don't want to get rid of their local elected offices. And so there's two ways a county can change from an elected position to an appointed position. One is the way I just explained. They can go through a referendum of the citizens, put it on the ballot, and ask the local citizens if we can change it or if they would support changing it to an appointment process for the county recorder, for the treasurer, or the auditor. The second way is to come to the legislature and bypass that local referendum process and have the legislature change it for the county commissioners. And members, let me share an example of why it is so important to keep an elected office at the county level, at least elected to the point where, unless the citizens decide to do different, we should keep them elected. Stevens County is a county in my district I've represented. And some years back, five, six, 7 years ago, they had a controversial local jail being proposed. And it was split among the county commissioners, but slightly tilted in pushing the jail project through. And in a county of less than 10,000 people, over 700 showed up at a local armory mad as hornets, wanting to stop this jail project that was going to be very expensive for the property taxpayers. But they were very frustrated because they weren't getting what they felt was accurate numbers. And members, at that meeting, the local elected auditor, partway through the meeting, had the guts to stand up and share the numbers that he knew, because he was the auditor, but he was also elected by those same people that were voicing their opposition at this meeting. He's said, and others have said in no uncertain terms afterwards, he would never have dared stand up and contradict some of the numbers and facts that were being talked about by some of the county commissioners who wanted this jail. And yet the residents that were standing up trying to defeat this were very concerned, but very appreciative that that local elected officer felt and had the freedom to stand up and share the numbers with them. To add to the story, that was a jail project that they were pushing, had just failed in a couple years prior by a referendum. So the commissioners should have known what the public sentiment already was, but they were pursuing ahead with the local jail. The project ultimately did not go forward. But if that local auditor had been appointed, the outcome likely would have been different, and the citizens who were very frustrated and disgusted about the numbers that they were not able to get, or they weren't feeling they got the accurate numbers, that local auditor stood up and shared those numbers because he was elected. And so, members, that's the kind of situation that we avoid when we keep local elected positions elected versus appointed, because it's a checks and balance in our county system. And so, members, this isn't anything against Crow Wing County. I have stood up and talked about the concern of this trend that I don't think is the right direction for a responsive government, that local citizens can have a reasonable way to unelect somebody that they don't feel is doing a good job and replace them with somebody that is. And these positions are very vital in our counties. The recorder keeps track of all the property records in our counties, deals with issues that come up with landowners, but it is very much customer service driven as well. And you will hear the argument that, well, these positions have gotten more technical, we need more computer skills, we need more accounting backgrounds. Folks, most of these offices have several staff hired anyways. And no one person has all of the skills that may be required anyways. And it's like any department, any division, any business, you complement yourself by hiring different people that have different tasks. Somebody that works at the front counter may not be your IT person, but your IT person also may not be the best customer service person at the front counter. You know what I'm talking about. And so the argument that they need to hire one person that does this, that person isn't going to do everything in the office anyways. But customer service and customer constituent response responsiveness is so important that I would urge you to vote no. And the Crow Wing commissioners can do like every other county could do, which is go to the local voters with a referendum. If they've got a compelling reason why this should be done, the voters locally should support it. But the legislature shouldn't bypass the local voters and pass this. And so, members, I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam President. Mr. President. I'm sorry.
I had a little,
that actually
more,
was a
little
mistake.
More hair.
That actually was a mistake. The other person does have
not
more
enough
hair,
yes. For that.
Members, there's no surprise that I rise against this, and I'm certainly not rising against Crow Wing County and their or the other counties that have come forward with this. I do echo the sentiments of Senator Westrom when I say this movement of that's going on in our state to take away the opportunity to elect county officials. Members, I'll just give you a little one, and I've done this before in Douglas County where I reside. It was actually brought to the voters there for the, and there was two things on the ballot. One was to combine the Office of Auditor Treasurer, and the other was, did you still want to continue to elect or appoint? Pretty straightforward. It was very clear that they were okay, and they'd done their homework on the combining of the two offices, so that was voted in. But what was really starking was that the members of the county still wanted to be able to elect that office, that person, that auditor treasurer that was soon going to be appointed, the position was going to be appointed. They still wanted to be able to elect that. Well over 70% of the folks said that they still did. So that's always stuck out in my mind. And I could just may remind you that what Senator Westrom said is there is a mechanism in place for the counties to go ahead and do this instead of coming down here and saying afterwards that, well, you know what, it was the legislature that did that, it wasn't us. No, in fact, it was the county that actually brought it forward. And members, they have a responsibility to do the right thing for their voters. Local control is what it should be all about. They're the same. What you have to realize is that, you know, the voters that voted in those county commissioners that are coming to you and I now for the appointed process are the same people that voted them into office. And they're also the same ones that voted you and I into office. So let's not underestimate the voters. They're very, very informed, especially on local issues. So, again, I just rise in opposition.
Senator Rood.
Mr. President, members, my esteemed colleagues are right. The legislature put forth two paths to follow in order to get this done. There is not a right way and a wrong way, but there are two ways. There is the local way of doing it, and then there is the way to come to the legislature. The legislature didn't say that one was wrong and one was right. They said there are two paths that you may choose. My county chose this path. It's not an easy path. They had to come down here three different times to three different committee hearings and convince the people of those committees, which they did because they passed out of those committees, that they had done their due diligence, that this is what they wanted as represented elected officials that represent their constituency. Members, our current auditor and recorder came down and testified in all three committees that they believe that this is the right way to do it. Our county commissioners have a signed resolution that they brought forth to me that this is what they choose to do and how they choose to represent their constituents. So while there are two paths, but there's not a right and a wrong path, there is the path that my county chose, and that's the path that we put before them as this legislature. So it is not a wrong path. It's the path that they chose for their constituents. So members, I ask you as to help Crow Wing County as you have over 52 other counties to do this. And maybe next year we can put forth a bill so that our counties don't have to continually come down to this legislative body and do this. Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. And I would like to join the members that are opposing this bill. I think it's extremely important that we maintain that bright line between the county auditor and the county board. And the way to maintain that bright line is to keep the auditor in an elected position. I just think that you lose the impartiality and the ability to provide impartial information if the county board is appointing the auditor. I think what Senator Westrom said about the elected nature of the position holds true, and I would oppose the House File 916.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Rood yield for a question?
Senator Rood will yield. Senator Eaton.
My question is, I'm wondering if there is a requirement for an outside audit in Crow Wing County.
Senator Rood.
Mr. President and Senator, that's a very good question because currently there are no auditing functions performed by the county auditor treasurer. Counties are audited exclusively by the state auditor every year. And so the term auditor is a job title and a historical reference. There really is no auditing done by the county auditor anymore. They are merely in a bookkeeping role because the state auditor takes control of that every single year.
Is there any further discussion on House File 916, Senator Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. President, and I rise in opposition of this bill. But, Mr. President, I also really respect Senator Rood, who is responding to the request of her county commissioners, who decided to ask her to carry this bill to us as 67 senators. So because of that, we now have a voice also in regards to the policy direction of this particular bill, which is to change from elected a position to an appointed position, thus consolidating power within the county commissioners. I think it is really important to have the checks and balances. You have the county auditor, the recorder, the treasurer. They each have their own duties. The most important thing about these three positions in particular is that they serve the people who elected them. And they are then accountable to the people who elected them. And that relationship between those who elect you and those whom you serve as an elected person is a very special relationship. When you change that, and now you have the county commissioners as your body, five members by which the recorder, treasurer, and auditor are accountable to, I think that the direct relationship between the voters, between the citizens of that county, and those elected officials who serve them is a very important relationship. The other thing is kind of the implication that this is such a rare job that only a couple can do it. I have no doubt that there are many qualified people in this county who are willing to run and to serve, and sometimes, matter of fact, is a very healthy, competitive situation by which they are able to talk to the voters, explain what they have done, for the new person to explain what they would like to do. That's a very healthy, healthy process for these really important positions of county auditor, the chief election official, the county auditor, the recorder, land transactions. These are things that really matter to people, and it's a healthy thing to have the discussion that goes along with an election. And so these jobs also have excellent pay, good benefits, they have pension, these are sought-after jobs. And so I would say that keeping them elected and keeping them responsible and mostly accountable to those who elected them through the election process is a very healthy way to conduct the business of the county, and so I would oppose this bill. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on House File 916? Senator Rood.
Mr. President and members, this bill has been a journey for me. If you look at it, you will see that it is put in by request. Because when my county commissioners came to me, I was not in agreement with this. I thought they should be elected, and I thought they were on the wrong path. And so I said I would put the bill in by request because it's my job to represent my constituents. And during this long journey with my county and the three committee hearings that we've gone through, I've seen the hard work that they've done, the due diligence that they have done with the constituents, all the work they have done to inform the meetings that they've had around my county, and they have changed my mind on this issue because they really have worked hard in this. They have worked very hard for the constituents. And so I would be proud to take the by request off of this bill and be the proud author of this bill because through their hard work and due diligence, they have changed my mind on this issue. And so I'm very proud of my county and what they have done, and I urge you to support them. Thank you.
Any further discussion on House File 916? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 916 its third reading.
House File Number 916, a bill for an act relating to counties, providing a process for making certain county offices appointive in Crow Wing County.
Any final discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes and 21 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move a brief recess for the purpose of appointing conference committees.
Senators in recess. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
I don't think so. No, yes, there is a privilege report at the desk. The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 307, Senators Eakin, Kent, and Rood, and on House File Number 1725, Senators Wicklund, Scalzi, and Anderson. Senator Bach moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, motion is adopted. The next bill under consideration is number 112 on general orders calendar, Senate File 1771, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senate File 1771 makes a few technical clarifying and some minor policy changes to the medical cannabis bill that we passed last year. Most of these changes originated within the agency itself, though it's not an agency bill per se in the classic sense. And these are some items that have come to light as the program has been in the early stages of implementation over the last year or so. A couple of items that just need to be either changed, adjusted a little bit, or buttoned up. A couple of items came to light as the bill started progressing through the committee hearing process, and so we picked up a couple of amendments on the way. So there are nine elements, and I'll describe them very quickly and then stand for questions and amendments. The first has to do with the definition of medical cannabis and what it exactly is, and it adds to that definition the plant itself, only in those circumstances when it is possessed by a person who is engaged in employment duties necessary to carry out the requirements of manufacturing and processing the plant into the forms that are allowable for use for treatment of conditions. So basically by employees of the labs or the manufacturers on premise and only in the process of them of the plant being modified to the allowable substances. The medical cannabis manufacturers have to be registered every year. This bill would propose that they re-register every 2 years rather than every year, just to minimize the level of bureaucratic effort that undergoes something that really need only occur every 2 years. When a patient is enrolled in the registry, we've made a few different changes. We make sure that their enrollment isn't completed until after they've paid their fee. We allow the commissioner 30 days to approve a patient's application for participation in the registry, except that in this initial startup phase, we allow the commissioner 60 days. And then we ensure that a patient's enrollment in the registry would terminate upon their death. Moving on, we ensure that those manufacturers who are approved, they're required to contract with a laboratory for purposes of quality control, impurity, and other controls that need to be in place. We make sure that that laboratory has already been approved by the commissioner before the manufacturer can contract with that laboratory, rather than the reverse. A manufacturer contracts with a laboratory, and then the commissioner comes in and later approves. We make sure that that happens at the outset. So it's just a timing adjustment. We added an amendment that allows hospitals the same sort of provisions and protections as we do nursing homes for those patients in their facilities that are in the registry and using medical cannabis. So basically, it makes sure that patients continue to have access to medical cannabis and provide some protections for the employees of those facilities in handling the substance on their behalf. We require a certified annual audit of the manufacturers, and we just make sure that the first audit, which is due May 1st of next year, is for the calendar year beginning this year. Clearly didn't make any sense to audit anything before this year because there was nothing to audit. But beginning in January of 2015 of this year, the audit, which will be due in May 1st of next year, is required. And then finally, everyone knows that we have nine conditions for which patients can qualify for registry in the program. The commissioner has the authority to add additional conditions. A procedure, some level of study, various steps are required of the commissioner. One of those requirements is that the commissioner allow a legislative session to pass once he's proposed to add a condition to the registry. The first condition he's required to study proactively in the bill that we passed is intractable pain. The commissioner has indicated that the studies and all the research on whether or not to add intractable pain will be completed prior to the coming legislative session in 2016. So we moved the deadline from July 1st of 2016 to January 1st of 2016. Should it then be added, it can be added at the midpoint of the year next year. Mr. President, that is the bill. I will stand for questions or amendments.
Are there any questions or comments on Senate File 1771? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1771 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1771, a bill for an act relating to health, changing provisions in the medical cannabis program.
Are there any final comments? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1771. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 54 ayes and 12 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 90 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1876. Senator Rosen. You want to pass this one? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was thinking I was smarter than the average bear, but I'm not here. Mr. President, members, this is Senate File 1876. It deals with the legislative task force being formed for the issue of child protection. As you know, there was two of us in this chamber that served on the governor's task force for child protection, Senator Sharon and myself, and Representative Kresha and Representative Mullery on the House side. It was a very, very worthwhile, humbling experience on that task force. We came forward this year with over 90 recommendations, and we are hopefully on our way to passing a few of the top three recommendations out of this chamber and working on many more. We realize that we need to continue our work with the task force. It was a very large task force, and so this effort from both the House and the Senate would create a legislative task force with the four legislators that have served on it previously, with the ability to add eight more members, ex officio members, to work on it in the next legislative session, to bring a report to the session next year, and then have the task force sunset at the end of the next legislative session. This task force would work on
oversight and monitoring with the department and counties and tribes to work on laws that are already related to child protection, some of the recommendations that came out of the governor's task force, and also work with the agencies that are involved, such as Department of Education, Department of Corrections, Housing Finance Agency, and the Department of Public Safety. We, as I explained it earlier, there's many issues revolving around the child protection issue, and we believe as the legislative members that have worked on this task force that we need to continue this work, because when you peel off the layers, there's more dealing with foster care or older children, just the way the system is working for various counties and how it's not working for various counties. So it's very complex. We would like to continue our work, and this piece of legislation, as I said, will have a sunset after we come to the legislative body with our recommendations. So with that, I ask for your support and any questions involved. Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments on Senate File 1876? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I rise in support of this bill that Senator Rosen is graciously offering to us. I just want to affirm that my perspective is that the work is just beginning. We really addressed in the language that you passed off the floor of this Senate and that we are negotiating now in the conference committee, just the front end of the child protection system. There's much more for us to look at, and making certain that the implementation that this Senate and House expect from the recommendations that were made would be a part of the role of this task force. I do think in the long run that the Health and Human Services Committee probably should have a subcommittee on child welfare with a very specific responsibility to oversee a huge body of responsibility in the Department of Human Services and to report back to the major policy committee every year. But for now, this task force has the potential of being able to make certain that what we have passed gets implemented correctly and that we continue to take a look at the rest of the recommendations and see that they get implemented and that the legislature plays its role in helping support the successful implementation of the reforms we need to this child protection system.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1876? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1876 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1876, a bill for an act relating to children, establishing a legislative task force on child protection.
Any final comments? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The final bill under consideration is number 108 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1694, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do have Senate File 1694. Senate File 694 provides a religious right to object to an autopsy in Minnesota statute. I want to start by saying that we have a very, very professional and well-running medical examiner community in the state of Minnesota by and large. But on occasion, there are times when families have felt less than valued in the work of the medical examiner and them, their desire to perform autopsies in opposition to the family's sincerely held religious beliefs. A couple of those instances happened up in my community, and it prompted us to review the statutes in this area and propose some amendments to make sure that this constitutional right that does always that has always existed is actually recognized in statute. So what this would provide for is notice to families that there is a right to object, but making sure that we have the careful balancing of compelling state interests that would require an autopsy be performed. State interests in either public health or in public safety to investigate crimes or suspicious deaths. And so in weighing that compelling state interest, we have pulled from the medical examiner's professional guidelines from their national association and made sure that we've covered all the bases in terms of when the compelling state interest outweighs the individual's needs. The individual's religious objection. And in that case, though, if an autopsy is still to be performed against an individual's religious objections, that the least restrictive means to accomplish the state's compelling interest would need to be used. You know, it was a long path to get here, and we worked with many stakeholders, and I'm very happy to report that we have no opposition to the bill. Medical examiners and county attorneys support the bill. The County Sheriff's Association are neutral. The tribes and the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition are in support of the bill. Several agencies within the administration got involved and were stakeholders. Corrections, the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Public Safety all had some issues that we needed to make sure were properly balanced, and we have no opposition to the bill. Everyone's issues have been addressed, and I would appreciate members' support. Stand for questions.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 1694? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I want to thank Senator Lurie for bringing this bill forward. It's important for all of us to realize that we have a number of different groups in the state of Minnesota, many with some very traditional beliefs, many with sincerely held religious beliefs that guide their lives, and occasionally government laws and procedures sometimes run contrary to that. We've had those discussions before, and Senator Lurie, I want to thank you for recognizing sincerely held religious beliefs here in the Minnesota Senate. It's vitally important that we recognize that constitutional principle in our writing of our state statutes. And so my hat's off to you. I am in support of this bill, and I hope that the entire Senate would recognize the sincerely held beliefs of our Indian tribes here today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1694? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1694 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1694, a bill for an act relating to public safety, providing for religious objections to autopsies in certain cases.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Are there any announcements? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam President. I would just like to bring to the attention of members of an invitation that you have on your desk. Next Wednesday, which is May 20th, is an important day for the Minnesota Zoo. We will be opening Discovery Bay, and we will be having an exhibit of the endangered Hawaiian monk seals. And we are invited as a legislature to take part in that program. And then also, if you cannot make it, you'll note that there's another date on Thursday, May 21st, that you could also see the exhibit and partake in that. So thank you, Madam President. And just one word, too. I think it's important to note that this was brought about because of the allocation that we gave to the zoo to bring that exhibit to fruition. So thank you.
Are there any other announcements? Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Limmer, 11 to 11:30. Senator Cohen, 11 to 12:15 and 12:50 to the end of session. Senator Bach, 12 to 12:15 and 1:05 to the end of session. Senator Sagsak and Hoffman, 12:05 to 12:15. Senator Hand, 12:15 to 12:45. Senator Senjum, 12:30 to 12:45. Senator Sagsak, 1 p.m. to the end of session. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. You mentioned Senator Bach. Is he not in the chamber at this time?
Senator Bach is not in the chamber. Senator Hand.
Would Senator Sieben be willing to answer a question?
Senator Sieben will yield. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sieben, I'm wondering if you can give the chamber any update on the status of negotiations. We're a week away from having to adjourn. I have not heard anything about the progress of the conference committees. I've heard some of them are meeting, but they're not really being too engaged in getting anything accomplished. I'm just wondering, can you tell us what the plan is, what the schedule is, when we're going to have the targets, and when we're going to get these bills passed?
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Han, the Majority Leader and Senator Cohen are meeting right now at the Governor's residence. It's my understanding with House leadership, so I don't have any other updates at this time, but look forward to hearing them as soon as we're able.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Sieben, maybe you can tell us, I had heard or understood that at least one of the areas, I think it's the agriculture area, there were targets agreed on, and I'm wondering if that particular conference committee is working on putting together their budget. I've not heard that there has been any movement there, but I'm wondering if you can tell us what the plan is on that particular budget area.
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Han, there have been no public announcements about that target or other targets that I'm aware of.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. Is Senator Tomasoni willing to answer a question?
Senator Tomasoni is not in the chamber. But Senator Dibble is here. Senator Dibble.
Madam President, am I responding to a question or making my announcement?
You're making your announcement.
Oh, okay.
Then Senator Hamm will.
Well, I don't know.
We can go back to Senator Hamm if he has more people he wants to call on. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. And for the record, I don't know anything. I just wanted to announce that the Conference Committee on House File 4, the Transportation Omnibus Finance Bill, will meet at 5:30 in room 200 of the State Office Building. Maybe we'll have a target and we'll settle up the bill. Who knows?
Did you say 5:30?
5:30, yes. And the plan is to talk about public-private partnerships and texting while driving fines.
And where are you meeting?
200 of the State Office Building.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. I did notice someone pointed out to me that Senator Tomasoni has returned to the chamber. I wonder if he would be willing to answer the question about the Ag Conference Committee.
Senator Tomasoni is willing to yield. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Tomasoni, I have heard that the targets for the Ag budget area have been agreed on with the House. I'm wondering if you and the conference committee are working on the budget details, and if you could share anything with the members of the chamber here on what the progress is of the ag budget.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, Senator Hahn, to this point, the House has the gavel, and I'm not privy to tell you of any progress because I don't think we've made any yet.
Are there any more announcements? Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now adjourn until Wednesday, May 13th at 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The House stands adjourned. The Senate stands adjourned.